It's 3:50 in the morning. Most people are sound asleep, just savoring the last couple hours of sleep before the sound of an alarm clock rings. At this very moment, a mysterious person dressed head to toe in replica SWAT police gear breaks into a local church. This mysterious person is spotted just casually wandering the halls of the dark and empty church, peering in windows, opening doors, carrying a hammer. The clock ticks by for nearly 30 minutes. Tick tock, tick tock. It's now time for 45-year-old fitness instructor Missy Beavers to arrive at the church to begin setting up for her 5 a.m. Camp Gladiator boot camp class. She's a beloved fitness instructor who is eager to begin day one of the new boot camp, and eager students will begin arriving at the church for their early morning workout shortly. The clock ticks by. Tick tock, tick tock. At 5:06 a.m., 911 dispatchers receive a phone call from the local church. The frantic caller on the other end of the line tells dispatchers that she's just arrived at her early morning boot camp class and her instructor is dead. Missy Beavers is not just dead. The fitness instructor, mother, and wife has been murdered. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. This week on Forensic Tales, we tell the complete story of the murder of Missy Beavers. Welcome to Forensic Tales. I'm your host, Courtney. Each Monday, we release a new episode that discusses real, bone-chilling true crime stories and how forensic science has been used in the case. Some cases have been solved through cutting-edge forensic techniques, while other cases have been left sitting on the shelf, collecting dust in the cold case division, just waiting to be solved by forensic science, like in the case of this week's story. Now, let's get to our very first episode featuring our first case that, as of today, remains unsolved with a killer who is still out on the loose. Missy Beavers was born on August 9, 1970, in the city of Graham, Texas, and was the middle child in the family. She was born Terry Leanne Strickland, but went by the nickname Missy for basically her entire life. Her parents, James Clinton Strickland and Norma Strickland, were also both from the Lone Star State. Missy was described by everyone she knew as being religious and a woman who truly cared for everyone she crossed paths with. After high school, she went on to college and earned a Bachelor of Science degree in 1995, and she went on to work a number of different retail jobs. Missy Beavers was well on her way to making a life for herself. Missy met her husband, Brandon Beavers, and the couple married on June 20th, 1998, when she was only 28 years old. She decided that she wanted to go back to school, and she started working as a teaching assistant, where she found a job working in special education, which I think is a truly special job that someone like Missy was absolutely perfect for. She taught in special education for several years, and the students that she taught were more like her own children and not just her students. The young and deeply in love Missy and Brandon welcomed their first daughter together. And this is when Missy decided to step away from her teaching assistant job so she could become a full-time mother to her new baby girl. Missy and Brandon would go on to welcome a total of three girls together, Allie, Hannah, and Sarah. Missy Beavers lived an extremely active and healthy lifestyle. Dozens of photos of her online depict a very happy and very healthy woman who participated in intense endurance events like the Spartan races and several other running events. Missy was super passionate about living a life that was healthy and happy. And she even turned her passion for health and fitness into a career. Now, this is a part of Missy's life that I can 100% relate to, and it's one of the biggest reasons why her case hits so close to home for me. In case you guys didn't know, besides being a forensic psychologist, I've been a group fitness instructor and certified personal trainer for just about 4 years now. And I've certainly made a huge part of my career teaching indoor cycling and having my own personal training business. So this part of Missy Beaver's life feels so deeply personal to me, and it's giving me this like unique connection to her when we've never even met before. So Missy Beavers was a beloved fitness instructor, and one of the classes that she taught was a 5 a.m. boot camp class at a local church in Midlothian, Texas. The boot camp class was affiliated with Camp Gladiator, a fitness class designed for fitness instructors who want to run their own classes in places like churches, community rooms, parking lots, and even other outdoor spaces. Now, I personally know how difficult and demanding it can be to lead a fitness class at 5 o'clock in the morning. I've had several group classes and personal training clients at that time of the morning, and in my opinion, it really takes a deep dedication to a class, especially when it's that early in the morning. Because not only are you responsible for getting up at the crack of dawn and showing up to class on time, but you're the leader. You're the one in charge of motivating and inspiring people no matter what time of day it is. But by all reports, Missy Beavers loved that 5 a.m. boot camp class. She really didn't mind waking up at the crack of dawn because she was doing something that she absolutely loved. And they always say you will never work a day in your life when you're doing something that you love. On the evening of April 17th, 2016, Missy Beavers was at home when she made several Facebook posts about her 5 a.m. Camp Gladiator boot camp class. She posts that the following morning is week one of the camp, and it's an endurance weight day. Her Facebook post says, quote, "If you've been using the same weight for the last two camps, it's time to go up. Hashtag let's make gains," end quote. She also attaches a picture to the Facebook post that says, "If it's raining, we're still training." And that's because the weather forecast that night forecasted heavy rain for the following morning. Missy makes a second Facebook post that says that she's off to bed because she has to get up super early for day one of Camp Gladiator. All of Missy's Facebook posts are made public, meaning anyone can see or read her post, not just her Facebook friends. This will be Missy Beavers' last Facebook post. The following morning on April 18th, 2016, at 3:50 a.m., CCTV surveillance footage captures an unknown individual breaking in to the Creekside Church of Christ in Midlothian, Texas. The mystery person is seen on surveillance footage dressed head to toe in replica SWAT riot gear. Now, we're going to talk a lot about this surveillance footage throughout the episode, but the camera catches this individual wearing an all-black helmet that completely hides their face. They're wearing a big, bulky black jacket with yellow words "police" written across the back. And they're also wearing black pants with big black boots. This person looks exactly like a police officer who might be responding to the scene of an out-of-control riot. This unknown individual is seen on camera slowly pacing the empty and dark halls of the church. As he or she is pacing the hallways, the camera catches a glimpse of a hammer or possibly some other type of mallet in their left hand. As the individual paces the hallways, holding the hammer or mallet, they're seen looking into windows, opening up random doors in the church, and is even observed breaking a window at one point. Although they break the window with the hammer, they don't break it in a way that you would expect by crashing into the glass. Not at all. This person appears to just loosely and just nonchalantly break the glass for no apparent reason. The individual doesn't appear to spend any amount of time at a particular door or location of the church. Their demeanor is simply that they are strolling the hallways of the dark church, dressed head to toe in SWAT tactical gear. The unknown intruder is caught on several cameras with different angles of the church for around 30 minutes. During several points of the video, he or she is seen just leisurely and ever so calmly swinging the hammer in their hand, back and forth, just back and forth. Before Missy Beavers would arrive at the church that morning, the intruder would head into the direction that is off camera and out of view of any surveillance cameras. They appear to be headed right in the direction that Missy Beavers would soon be arriving. Missy Beavers arrives at the same Creekside Church of Christ early that morning to begin setting up the room for her 5 a.m. boot camp class, completely unaware of the person who is already inside the church, presumably waiting for her. At 5:06 a.m., 911 dispatchers receive a frantic phone call from the Creekside Church of Christ. The caller tells the 911 dispatcher that they arrived at the church just minutes earlier for an early morning boot camp class and had discovered that her instructor was dead. The 911 dispatcher tries to calm down the frantic caller and tells her that police and paramedics are on the way. The caller tells 911 that Missy is unresponsive and that she can very clearly see large puncture wounds to the top of Missy's head and chest. When responding officers and paramedics arrive at the church that morning, it is clear to them that Missy wasn't simply dead. The beautiful fitness instructor, wife, and mother of three had been murdered. The first responding officers initially thought that they might just be responding to a robbery that had gone wrong, and this was largely because of the broken glass that they had observed on their way inside the church. Once they arrived in the room where Missy was murdered, they immediately could tell that not only was Missy brutally attacked, but she also showed signs that the fitness instructor put up a struggle against her attacker. An autopsy of Missy Beavers revealed that the wife and mother had died from multiple puncture wounds to her head and her chest. The medical examiner was able to quote, "The wounds on Missy's head and chest were consistent with the tool the suspect was carrying throughout the building. This confirms that the hammer that the individual who broke into the church that early morning is the same murder weapon that caused Missy's untimely death. The news of Missy Beaver's death quickly spread throughout the Texas community and soon after made national headline news. The community and the entire nation was shocked and devastated by her death. How could anyone kill someone who was so loved and who made a career out of helping others? Now, three young girls were left without a mother, and a husband grieved the loss of a wife. The public just couldn't believe that someone as beautiful as Missy Beavers could be murdered in such a brutal and terrible way. Once the news of Missy Beaver's death hit the community and the nation, authorities quickly got their hands on the church's surveillance tapes. Police were anxious to see what, if anything, was on the tapes that could reveal anything about Missy's murder. But as soon as the investigators played the surveillance tape, they couldn't imagine, even in their wildest dreams, what they would find. Shortly after Missy Beaver's murder, authorities released to the public several minutes of the surveillance footage from inside the church. Now, I have watched a couple different versions of different parts of the video that have been released. And no joke, the surveillance video gives me chills every single time that I watch it. And I must have seen it a dozen times. The church's surveillance system was actually able to catch almost every movement this individual makes while walking the halls of the church, except for when they go behind a closed door. If you just Google the Missy Beaver surveillance tape, you'll get about a dozen links to different videos. So if you're interested in watching, it's super easy to find a couple videos online. So there's several things that stand out to me about the surveillance tapes. And these are things that stand out to the police and many other people who have also watched the videos. But when I watch the video, I notice that right away, this individual has borrowed this replica SWAT riot gear. Maybe it's a costume or something, but the outfit definitely doesn't fit this person properly. It looks like it's about two or three sizes too big for him or her. This tells me that this person is most likely trying to disguise their true appearance and body shape. But don't get me wrong, even though it might be a costume, the outfit that this person is wearing looks totally real. It doesn't look like some $20 Party City costume you might wear to a Halloween party. The next thing that stands out to me is this individual's walk. By the video, you can tell this person has a very unusual gait, for the lack of a better term. And to put it frankly, this person just walks funny. And it's a gait that is very different, very recognizable if you saw it on someone again. This person may have some sort of permanent injury to their leg. I think it's even possible that they have a prosthetic leg. And that's the reason why they walk in this particular manner. Whatever the case may be, the individual in this surveillance video has a very unusual and a particular walk. Now, I'm not sure why this individual chose to wear police riot gear besides to cover up their true identity and body shape, but it's my opinion that it could have been a costume choice to try and throw off police investigators. Like maybe this person has ties to law enforcement, or maybe it was just a costume that the intruder knew could allow for them to get close enough to Missy that morning. But I think the costume does reveal important information about who this person is. Experts were able to determine through the surveillance video that the person in the video is between 5'2" and 5'7". Initially, authorities believed that this person was most likely a male. But once this information about the height and stature of this person were revealed, it's equally as likely that the individual could be a female. One of the first things that homicide investigators do after a murder is start looking into the victim's personal life. People are way more likely to be murdered by someone that they know and is close to, compared to being killed by a random stranger. So after Missy Beaver's death, police start digging into the deep, dark corners of her personal life. If they have any chance at solving the case, they have to know everything, and I mean everything, about Missy Beaver and her life. So police soon discover that Missy and her husband Brandon don't exactly live a traditional lifestyle, and their marriage isn't as perfect as it appears. Things aren't always what they appear in a marriage. There are several reports that indicate that Missy was possibly having several affairs outside her marriage to Brandon. There was also an indication to police that Missy and Brandon suffered from financial struggles at the time of her murder. Relationships or affairs and money are oftentimes the most popular motives behind murder. And with this in mind, police shift their focus to the husband, Brandon, who just may have had the motive to kill his wife and the mother of his children. The police and the public start suspecting that Missy's husband, Brandon, may have been involved in her brutal murder. When police sit down and talk with Brandon a few days after the murder, he provides them with an airtight alibi. It turns out that Brandon was over 600 miles away on a fishing trip the very morning that Missy was killed. But us true crime addicts know that just because a person of interest has an airtight alibi and they place themselves hundreds of miles away from the incident doesn't necessarily mean that they're squeaky clean. Missy's husband Brandon certainly had the motive to kill his wife. The couple obviously had marital and financial issues at the time of her death. So just because Brandon wasn't physically near the church that morning doesn't completely rule him out as a potential suspect in her murder. 4 days after Missy's murder, Brandon's father and Missy's father-in-law reportedly dropped off a blood-stained shirt at a local dry cleaning business. Missy's father-in-law, 64-year-old Randy Beavers, brought a white, double XL, women's, long-sleeved shirt to the Dry Clean Supercenter in Midlothian. The father-in-law reportedly told the dry clean employee that the shirt needed to be cleaned because it had animal blood all over it. According to Randy Beavers, the blood on the shirt was from a dog fight that had broken out in Missy Beavers' sister-in-law's kitchen a few days earlier. The dry clean employee, who knew about Missy's murder because it had been all over the local news, thought that it was super suspicious that Randy was asking them to clean a blood-soaked shirt just a few days later. The employee also noticed something else that was very suspicious. The employee thought that it looked like someone had already tried to clean the blood off the shirt before coming in to the dry cleaners. So the employee decided to contact police and let them know about Missy's father-in-law dropping off the bloody shirt. The police immediately obtained a search warrant for the father-in-law's bloody shirt, and according to the search warrant, the police believed that the shirt may contain valuable DNA evidence that could help them with the investigation into Missy's death. Once police announced to the public that they were executing a search warrant, public speculation of Missy's father-in-law, Randy, and his involvement in her murder swirled like crazy. The public instantly began speculating that Missy's husband, Brandon, or her father-in-law, Randy, just may be involved in the murder. Once the local police obtained the bloody shirt, it was immediately sent off to the crime lab for DNA testing. After a few days, the test results came back. And well, the shirt tested positive for animal blood, not human blood. Which goes along with Randy Beaver's story that the family dog had gotten into a fight with another dog, which explains the blood on the shirt in the first place. Although there are several people who speculate that Missy's husband Brandon or her father-in-law Randy may still be involved in her murder, the police tell the public that none of Missy's family members are considered suspects at this time. If Missy's family and husband weren't considered suspects during this investigation, the public and the police speculated that either someone who was romantically involved with Missy or maybe their significant other may be responsible for her murder that morning. Because again, us true crime people know that love and intimate relationships are always a potential motive to murder. The police execute search warrants on Missy and Brandon's cell phones to try and get additional information about their last known communications. A forensic search of the cell phones confirmed earlier suspicions that the couple was definitely facing marital and financial problems at the time. The police also identified what they termed target numbers from Missy's cell phone. Basically, these target numbers were phone numbers to men that police believed Missy may have been romantically involved with prior to her murder. Police pinpointed 11 target numbers based on text messages, photos, and videos obtained from the forensic search of Missy's cell phone. So although police have identified 11 potential persons of interest, after the forensic search of the cell phone, the police announced to the public that no one particular person would be named as a potential person of interest. So once again, the public and the police find themselves back at square one in the search to find Missy Beaver's killer. At this point in the investigation, Missy's husband and family aren't considered persons of interest in the case, and neither is anyone found on Missy's cell phone. So police go back to surveillance tapes in and around the church in hopes of finding anything that may lead them closer to her killer. So the police become aware of a nearby business that also has surveillance footage of the area around the church. After hours and hours of watching the footage, a 2010 to 2012 Nissan Altima is seen driving very slowly around the neighboring closed businesses. The footage shows the driver turning their headlights on and off several times as they circle around the parking lot. At one point, the driver and the vehicle park for a short time just underneath a parking lot light. Now, I've also seen this surveillance footage several times for myself, and I think it does provide valuable information to the case, because it's quite possible that the driver of this Nissan Altima is also Missy's killer. But to this day, neither the driver nor the vehicle have been positively identified by law enforcement. Again, if you guys want to check out this video for yourself, if you just Google or YouTube the Missy Beaver's case, there's a ton of videos that you guys can go and watch and try to figure out for yourself what exactly you think that you see. While the police continue to search for the driver of the Nissan Altima, they also take another look at Missy's cell phone and computer for any information into her death. This is also the point where a friend of Missy's comes forward to the police and tells them that less than 3 days before she was murdered, Missy had shown the friend a private message on LinkedIn, and this message was sent from a person that neither Missy or her friend even knew. Missy's friend told police that both her and Missy found that this message was super odd and kind of creepy because neither one of them had any idea who this person even was or why he was trying to private message Missy on LinkedIn. During this interview with police, Missy's friend couldn't remember the name of this person who sent the creepy message. Detectives working on the case also identified another person who confirmed with police that he had engaged in a series of messages with Missy on LinkedIn starting in January 2016. I really didn't know that LinkedIn was such a popular platform to exchange messages with people, and I have an account myself. I would think that Facebook or Instagram would be much more likely. But apparently, LinkedIn was a common platform that Missy used for messaging. So the messages between Missy and this second individual were described as being, quote, flirtatious and familiar. Once police conducted a forensic data extraction on both this individual's phone and Missy's phone, police right away could tell that the conversations between the two were definitely intimate and would highly suggest a flirty type relationship between them. And the forensic extraction also revealed that both Missy and this individual had deleted the messages after their conversation had ended. But as of now, and where this case currently stands, this flirty conversation on LinkedIn has not led to a single arrest in Missy's murder. Police also issued a search warrant on a tower dump of cell phone data from around the time Missy was killed at the church. This would basically allow police to find out who exactly was in the area of the church at the time of the murder, based upon cell phone pings. Police were hopeful that if the killer was carrying a cell phone at the time of the murder, it just may have pinged off a tower near the church location. So it's not exactly clear if this search revealed any valuable evidence to the case or not. I wasn't able to find a single report indicating that the police had found anything from searching the cell phone tower data. Since no information has been released by the police, my best assumption here is that the search likely didn't reveal any solid evidence into who Missy's killer really is. At the time of the recording of this episode, there has been no arrest made in the brutal murder of Missy Beavers, nearly 4 years ago in April 2016. Since her murder, Missy's mother-in-law has posted two very public and very open letters that speak directly to Missy's killer. I've read both of these letters, and they are absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, the letters speak directly to the killer, and they plead for him or her to finally turn themselves in. The second letter reads, quote, "It has been 2 weeks since I wrote the first letter to you. Almost 3 weeks since you murdered Missy. I would guarantee your life has been more miserable than ours. Our life has been filled with peace that you couldn't understand. Something only a God-fearing, saved by Jesus person truly understands. We've been blessed by so many wonderful people willing to share our grief by praying with us, preparing meals for her family, and just blessing us with all their actions in so many ways. How about you? Are you feeling all the love from your family and friends? Or do they suspect you, thinking something is not right with you? How did it make you feel when so many people all over this nation said such glowing things about Missy? You probably sat back and thought, how little do they really know her? I assume you were jumping up and down when the news about her life was not as perfect as a lot of people thought. Well, let me tell you a little secret you may not comprehend. No, she wasn't perfect and she never claimed to be. But the secret is, there is something called a gap love. Meaning, there really is a love you have, no matter what you have done in the past or present. You still love them. I know her husband does, her three girls, her mom, brothers, all of her family and friends. Sorry, there is nothing that can ever change that. I'm sure that disappoints you, but it's the truth. Are you getting a bit nervous, shaking in your boots that look too big? You should be. It's just a matter of time now. Things would be a lot easier on to just go ahead and turn yourself in. I'm sure the officials will take that into account. Go ahead and clear your conscience. You will feel better. No sense in having your family witness you being picked up by the police and leaving the last envision of their minds forever. We are all waiting. It's one way or the other. So the case of Missy Beavers today remains unsolved. We still don't know who the person is who broke into the church that early morning and who is likely the same person responsible for Missy's death. It's now been close to 4 years since the murder, and there's been no arrest made in the case, despite the fact that local police have received more than 2,000 tips regarding her case. If you look this case up online, go on Reddit, or any other true crime forum, you can really find yourself just going deep down into a rabbit hole. I know I found myself leaning in so many different directions as to who I think this killer might be. So some of the popular theories point at Missy's husband Brandon as somehow being involved in the murder, despite the fact that he was hundreds of miles away on a fishing trip. We know that someone doesn't have to physically be at the scene of a crime to somehow be involved in the case. But Brandon has made a couple of news appearances where he's expressed what it's been like since Missy's death. And he's basically let the public know that he and his daughters have been harassed by several people who still think that he was somehow responsible. Which, you guys, that's terrible, especially when I think about Missy's three young daughters. They've already lost their mother in such a tragic way, and now to be harassed is just awful. Even though, again, Brandon has never been named as a suspect, there are still people out there that think he may have possibly had something to do with it because of the financial and marital problems the couple were having at the time of her death. People speculate, and again, this is pure speculation, that Brandon may have actually hired someone to kill Missy that morning. A second theory is that the killer might be someone who was romantically involved with Missy at the time of her death. Or more likely, a significant other of someone who she was seeing or talking to. As I said earlier, I think that love and jealousy can certainly be a motive for murder, as awful as that sounds. It's possible that someone who's a wife to a man who was found talking to Missy Beavers around that time decided that she wanted to hurt Missy. I don't think that this theory is too far-fetched, because if you remember, the prime suspect in the church surveillance video is thought to be somewhere between 5'2" and 5'7", and is quite possibly a female. When I watch the video, I can't say for 100% certainty whether this person is a male or a female. But based on my personal observation, I think that it's very likely that it might actually be a female. And if it is a female, then the theory that it might be someone who's a scorned significant other, well, it's possible. And I personally lean more towards this theory than any other theory, and especially the theory that Missy's husband is somehow involved. A third theory is that Missy's death was just some random act by a random stranger, that Missy Beavers just simply was at the wrong place at the wrong time. It's possible that the individual dressed in SWAT gear that morning in the church was in there from some other reason entirely. And possibly, when this person came upon Missy setting up for her fitness class, in a random act and decision, decided to attack her. It's also speculated that the individual was actually targeting someone else that morning, maybe one of Missy's students in the church. Now, I think this theory, out of the theories that we've looked at so far, is the least likely, and that's largely based on what we see in the surveillance video. Nothing was taken or stolen from the church that morning, and although a window seemed to be cracked, it doesn't appear that the person is looking to rob the church. The individual really just appears to be waiting around for something or someone and is possibly just staging it to look like it was a robbery. Based on the videos and what I have researched about this case, it just doesn't appear to be a random act by a random stranger. It's my opinion, again, only a personal opinion, that Missy Beavers was certainly the target that early morning. But until the case is solved, we have to be open to several different theories about the case. A fourth theory is someone in Brandon's family had something to do with Missy's death, possibly Randy, her father-in-law. Randy was the one who took the bloody shirt to the dry cleaners a few days after the murder. And even though we now know that the blood on the shirt was later found to be animal blood, people still think that he had the motive to hurt Missy that morning. And his motive is similar to Brandon's, that because the couple were having marital and financial problems, this may be motive to help his son and basically off his cheating daughter-in-law. Some people even believe that Randy has a similar walk as the individual seen in the surveillance video. Again, none of these theories have led to any arrests in the case, and the police have been pretty straightforward by saying that no one in Missy's life is considered a suspect or even a person of interest in the case, and this includes her immediate family. So whichever theory you're leaning towards, we are still asking ourselves the big question in the case: who killed Missy Beavers? The murder of Missy Beavers is a case that is totally solvable, and I believe that someday we will know exactly who Missy Beavers' killer really is. And I truly believe that forensic science is going to be what cracks this case wide open. Not much is known about the forensic evidence in Missy's case. The FBI and Texas Rangers have been involved in the case since day one. And right after the murder, a special police dog was brought in to sniff out things like gunshot residue, believing that a gun may also have been used in the murder. Although the police have kept some evidence secret and out of public knowledge, everything I read suggests that the dog didn't sniff out any valuable evidence in the case. Right after Missy's death, police and crime scene technicians went inch by inch in an attempt to collect a DNA sample from the killer. Because the attack on Missy Beavers involved a hammer, which is a very up-close and personal type of attack. You would think that there would be significant exchange in DNA. You would probably assume that while the suspect was attacking Missy in the church with the hammer, that some of the killer's DNA, whether through blood, touch DNA, or any significant transfer, would occur. But investigators found very little forensic evidence at the crime scene. Investigators were able to collect some DNA from the scene. I haven't found anything that suggests where exactly this DNA was found, but what they collected hasn't led to any success. The DNA sample that they were able to collect was referred to as a mixed sample. And after being tested, it only produced a partial DNA profile. So a mixed DNA sample can occur when there's more than one person's DNA in that sample. And when this occurs, it's possible that only a partial DNA profile can be detected. And when there's a partial DNA profile, that basically means that scientists who are testing the sample are only getting a few markers. They aren't getting a complete DNA profile to say, hey, this is definitely the person. So in Missy's case, with only the partial DNA profile, police aren't able to take that DNA profile and run it through the FBI's national database, CODIS, to look for a possible match. And unfortunately, you need a complete DNA profile. But this doesn't mean that DNA won't be able to solve the case of Missy Beavers. As our technology gets better and better, it's totally possible for police to use that partial DNA profile to be able to find their perfect match. There's also the possibility of genetic genealogy. Now, since the police haven't disclosed much about this partial DNA profile, I'm not sure how much they have to work off of. But it's quite possible that through genetic genealogy, like what we saw in the Golden State Killer case, that someone in the killer's family may pop up once they submit their DNA to a database. And from there, police can narrow down their suspects based on several factors, like where the person was at the time of Missy's murder, and would that person even have a motive to kill her? So I think it's totally possible that genetic genealogy can be used to finally solve Missy's case. The murder of Missy Beavers is certainly a case that is sitting on the shelf, just waiting to be solved by cutting-edge forensic science technology. I will continue to follow this case, and if there are any updates to it, I promise to update my Forensic Tales listeners. Please share the surveillance video from inside the church and the video of the Nissan Altima. Someone, somewhere knows who this individual is. And the more that we share, the more people who see it. Well, that's just another set of eyes on the case that could potentially lead to Missy's murder finally being solved. I would love to hear what you think happened to Missy Beavers and who you think her killer is. You can email me at Courtney@ForensicTales.com, or you can connect with us on social media. Forensic Tales is on Facebook and Instagram. If you have any tips or information regarding Missy Beavers' murder, please contact the tip line at 972-775-7624. You can also provide information about the case by texting MIDL to 847-411. Of course, all tips regarding Missy's death are kept confidential. I truly hope and wish that Missy Beavers' family will someday finally have the justice that they so desperately deserve. Forensic Tales is a Rockefeller audio production. If you like to read more about Missy Beavers and view photos from the case, check out our website, ForensicTales.com. I would love to hear what you think about Missy's case and who you think is responsible for her murder. You can email us at Courtney@ForensicTales.com or post your thoughts on our Facebook or Instagram page. If you like the show, the biggest compliment you could give us is leaving us a rating with a review and sharing the show with friends and family who love true crime stories. Join us next week. We release a new episode every Monday. And until then, not all stories have happy endings.